Okay, I can't be the only one who hates, okay, hate may be too strong a word, but dislikes Wes Anderson movies. I mean, they're too clever by half. I love his debut movie, Bottle Rocket, with Luke Wilson and Owen Wilson. That was from 1996. Kind of a goofy crime comedy, just about these three dopey Texans and their attempt to become professional burglars. I mean, it's a great movie. It's fun. And I think the low budget limitations kind of worked to help make the movie pretty good. 2001's The Royal Tenenbaums is kind of where it started to get so overly art directed and twee, kind of aloof, self-indulgent. Kind of sounds like me. It's like he gets so lost in the movie making that he forgets to make an enjoyable movie. Kind of like Fincher sometimes. And I've enjoyed moments of his movies, but as like a whole movie, only Bottle Rocket really works for me. And Wes Anderson tends to get carte blanche, which in French means blank document. And the recipient of this document or check can basically write in whatever dollar amount he wants. I mean, the guy has talent, obviously, but it needs to be harnessed in some way or something. Another really good movie about a trio of goofballs who are struggling for money and they decide to become criminals. It's called Palookaville. There's a funny scene where the guys are like planning a jewelry store robbery, but they mistakenly break into a bakery next door. It's got William Forsythe, Adam Treese, and a great performance by Vincent Gallo. It also has kind of a charming Kim Dickens in it as Gallo's love interest, and they have like a sweet little relationship in the movie. It's directed by Alan Taylor and just a fun, kind of silly, but kind of heartfelt movie. Check that out. I love reading the newspaper, me and like 10 other people. And there was a mention of the writer David Brooks's resume virtues versus eulogy virtues. Resume virtues are what, you know, you bring to the marketplace. Eulogy virtues are what's talked about at your funeral. Whether you were kind, brave, honest, or faithful, or were you capable of deep love? And everything is so material-based these days. I mean, hey, how much money do you make? Or, your success with work or women. But that's all bullshit in the end. And there's a lot of successful as hell, rich as hell people that offer nothing of real value. They probably often don't even have any really close friends. And the only people that may show up at their funeral probably came to make sure the son of a bitch is really dead and to say good riddance. So let's talk about some great French movies. A pretty good play I saw in San Jose. Yes, believe it or not, something good in San Jose. And the usual poo-poo platter of random stuff.
You are my density. You are my density.
So I was slightly stoned the other day, and sometimes I come up with like phrases or things when I'm high. Sometimes they're terrible. Sometimes they're great. Okay, well, maybe sometimes they're good. But yeah, the other day I got a couple things. And picture this as like a New Yorker cartoon. So two people are sitting at a dinner table, and one of them says, "Can we just have a nice dinner? Okay? No hallucinations." And then I came up with like this character, Dusty Honcho. I had to actually look it up while I was stoned. I was like, is that a thing? And it kind of sounds like either a cowboy star or a sex act or like a piece of clothing. He wore a dashing, if dusty, honcho. Yes, weird, but, And speaking of weird, does anyone else remember Flo's famous quip from the TV show Alice? She would say, "Kiss my grits." I mean, how good is that? It was a TV show, but originally was the subject matter of Martin Scorsese's Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore from 1974 with the great Ellen Burstyn, Kris Kristofferson, a young Jodie Foster, and Harvey Keitel. And often Flo would be saying, "Kiss my grits," to her boss at the diner, played by Vic Tayback, in both the movie and the TV show. Vic Tayback died of a heart attack at only 60 years old, so rest in peace, Vic. So anyway, I had kind of a couple days of culture in San Jose, believe it or not. First, I'd mention the movie The Beast, a new French and English movie, which I guess was loosely based on Henry James' 1903 novella, The Beast in the Jungle. The Beast is from 2023, but just being released here in the U.S. In 2024. It's directed by Bertrand Bonello with the great Léa Seydoux and an okay George MacKay. It's set in three time periods, 1910 Paris, 2014 Los Angeles, and 2044 Paris. It's pretty amazing. I mean, it's very ambitious, kind of touches on the internet and the increasing power of artificial intelligence. The future Léa Seydoux in 2044 has to decide whether to have her like DNA purified by this AI computer. She goes into this machine that will like immerse her in her previous lives and rid her of any strong feelings. It's kind of about fate and the fear of feeling too deeply. And in order to kind of avoid any kind of emotional discomfort, we sometimes end up destroying ourselves or others. But yeah, it's a bit of a long movie, but it didn't feel it. It's a bit noir, a bit kind of David Lynch-y at times. There's this fortune teller on the internet that's fucking great. And the middle segment has kind of a character loosely based on Elliot Rodger, who felt his life was unfair and he didn't have a girlfriend, and he ended up killing six people and himself in Isla Vista in Santa Barbara in 2014. He was one of those kind of incel types, involuntary celibates, which is like, you know, kind of lonely, angry men. And it has a strong anti-female element. I mean, look, it's hard to get a girlfriend, but you have to keep trying. You don't go and shoot people and you don't get bitter. I mean, work on yourself, make yourself interesting. And if no one wants to join the ride with you, then fuck it. Make it an interesting one anyway, you know? I mean, you're the screenwriter of your life. But yeah, you don't go attack others because of something missing in your life. And I haven't gone on a date or anything for a little bit. And I don't blame the system or evil women. I blame myself. I mean, I'm kind of an extroverted loner. I'm desperate for some interaction, but I also need a lot of time by myself. And I also cut my own hair sometimes, you know. And I'm sure you're wondering, why is this guy single? He's dripping with charisma. But yeah, I won't find a girl if I'm stuck in my teeny apartment. I mean, it's really small. I don't even think a girl could hide in here. But I have been trying to get out more, though. And, you know, that's it. You just got to try. Okay, let's get to San Jose cultural moment number two. I had wanted to see the playwright and movie director Martin McDonagh's Hangman in New York City around 2020. But that was just when COVID was hitting. So I didn't go to New York, and they ended up delaying the New York opening for years. But anyway, the original cast has this cool kind of rock star vibe, Johnny Flynn. He's kind of handsome and kind of ugly, which I consider myself. So no insult, Johnny. And speaking of the Beast, the movie Beast from 2017 has Johnny Flynn in it and the just great Jesse Buckley, who's shaping up to be one of the best actresses of our time, slowly and steadily. It's well done, pretty arty, but in a good way. It's about a troubled young woman who falls for a mysterious outsider. There's some murders, it's well shot, and it's got a hell of an ending. But anyway, back to Hangman. The San Jose stage did a great performance of it. I mean, the acting was solid, great direction, and totally pro stuff, so kudos to you guys. The play is about the last hangman in England. It's set in 1963 and 1965. The last hangman has this bar, and this mysterious stranger comes to town, and it gets weird. There's a missing girl, and it's like, who's innocent? Who's the guilty one? It's good stuff. I really enjoyed Martin McDonagh's The Lieutenant on Inishmore. I saw Chris Pine in it in Los Angeles in 2010. It was a crazy-ass, bloody, violent, twisted play, and Chris Pine was so good in it. I'm not a huge fan of his, but yeah, he was good. And supposedly his directorial debut, Pool Man, which is kind of a detective-y noir stoner thing that's coming out later this year, it's supposed to be really bad. The trailer looks okay, but the movie is just supposed to be garbage. And quickly about plays, it's like standing ovations are like now just a given in any play. I mean, I stand up when I'm like, you know, impressed or blown away. Not everything deserves a standing ovation, but usually I do stand up just because I can get the fuck out of there quicker. But anyway, and I remember during that 2020 period when the Hangman play got delayed because of COVID, I was working at a psych hospital in San Diego. It was hell. And this was like the height of COVID paranoia. No one knew what we were dealing with. Is it a cold? Is it cancer in the air? Are we all dead? It was a crazy time. But I remember New York City was kind of a hotbed of COVID activity because of so many travelers. And at the psych hospital, some patient had recently just returned from New York City from a trip. And so they put him in isolation just because he had been to New York City recently. I remember it was like a whole big unit of the hospital, like maybe 30 beds. And it was just me wearing the whole magilla of protective wear and this one patient who like would watch TV or hung out in his room. I do remember him being nice, but it was so surreal. I mean, it was literally like something from a science fiction movie. Okay, continuing on the French theme. And it's a goddamn fact that everything sounds better in French. Everything sounds like interesting or cultured. Like, I want to take a piss in French probably sounds like je ne sais pas quoi faire le coucher. But yeah, I'm a fan of the French director Bruno Dumont. I remember loving his Humanity from 1999. and the weird French TV miniseries Little Quinquin from 2014. It also has a sequel that I haven't watched yet, but it's kind of a bonkers murder mystery with this tick-laden, weary, weird detective trying to solve a murder. It's almost got a little bit of a Harmony Korine vibe, who I run hot and cold on. I've always loved Chloe Savigny, though. Yikes. But yeah, Bruno Dumont has this eerie, slow, but devastating kind of horror movie called 29 Palms from 2003. It's about these two lovers scouting for a photo shoot. It has like this foreboding quality. And at the end, there's like a couple sequences of such raw and like brutal violence. It's like shocking. It's a slow burn, but the ending section is just, it's like scary stuff. I mean, it'll knock you off your ass, but you'll never want to see it again. And so anyway, I was on Amazon and I'd come across this recent movie, The Animal Kingdom from 2023. And I was like, what is this? I clicked on it and it's French. And it's with the great actor Romain Duris, who is just kind of close to my age, and he's just aging so fucking well. And he's just a great goddamn actor. He seems like he has tons of personality. It's directed by Thomas Kelly, and also has a whopper of a performance by the teenage son Paul Kircher, who plays Emile. It's set in this world where mutations are transforming some people into animals. It's almost like COVID gone wild in a way, like the revenge of Mother Nature. And Romain Duris is Francois, whose wife is mutating into a creature, and possibly his son is as well. It's kind of a surreal topic, but it's shot so well and kind of underplayed and acted so well. Some people want to like lock the mutated people up. Some people want to coexist with them. And of course, some people want to destroy them. There's a scene near the beginning where some human mutation with these like tentacles is running around a supermarket. It's like, holy shit. The soundtrack by Anthony Partos is great as well. But yeah, Romain Duris has such an intelligence and personality about him. And Paul Kircher's slow transformation is gripping stuff. I mean, it's about coming of age, falling in love, fathers and sons, and kind of letting go. The ending is so emotionally moving, I found it hard not to cry. Actually, I did cry. But I was exhilarated after the movie. I mean, it spoke to me like a man's inhumanity to each other and the fear of the unknown, but also the power of decency and understanding. I know I have mentioned the Sidney Lumet-directed River Phoenix Judd Hirsch movie, Running on Empty. And the ending of The Animal Kingdom, in a way, strongly parallels the ending of Running on Empty. And it's just about knowing when to let go. Both movies are great. The Animal Kingdom, wow. I mean, I'm definitely going to watch it again. It's probably in my top 20. But yeah, the movie completely took me into a different world. And I almost viewed the world differently after watching The Animal Kingdom, which is when you know you've seen a great movie. Like I said, it's underplayed, yet it's gripping and just has the greatest, saddest, satisfying ending. Please, please watch it. I will pay you to rent it, okay? Here's an IOU, or I'll pay you with an NFT. Of an IOU. But yeah, speaking of escaping, I often find myself getting high, not to like have fun, but more so to kind of annihilate myself for a while, which I know is not a solution and it's kind of a cop out. But the artificial highs are never as good as our natural highs, like the high from a great movie or music or a great conversation or falling in love. I mean, that's better than cocaine. And the more you use artificial highs, the less you can feel the natural highs. So, you know, you got to be careful. Artificial highs are kind of like hacking your system and giving you something you haven't really earned. The best highs are internal, not some external pill or powder or drink you consume. And to quote Homer Simpson, who said, "To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems." I can't really do a Homer Simpson impersonation, sorry. And I do like Hunter S. Thompson quite a bit. His righteous kind of anger and just vicious takedowns of corrupt politicians is priceless. I mean, when he's at his best, he's untouchable. But I do think he had some trouble there when he started kind of living the legend that he had made of himself. The alcohol, the drugs, they took their toll. He was no longer partying or having fun. I think he just became addicted. And he was kind of a turkey of a father. When you have a kid, it's your responsibility to man up and make some changes and be a good father. Yes, you may have to give up drugs and some fun, but in the long run, it's worth it. And by the end, Hunter S. Thompson was just starting to get bitter. And in his suicide note, he said, "I'm always bitchy. No fun for anybody. Relax. This won't hurt." And then he shot himself in the kitchen of his famous owl farm compound in Woody Creek, Colorado. Hunter S. Thompson was obsessed with Ernest Hemingway, and he ended up taking the same manner of death as his hero, though Thompson used a handgun and Hemingway used a shotgun. Whichever, they both make you dead. And famously, Johnny Depp funded Hunter's funeral where his ashes were blown into the sky from a cannon accompanied to music. So yeah, Hunter went out with a bang. Literally. Now rest in peace, Hunter S. Thompson. And to close up, that movie, The Beast, was about the dangers of being vulnerable and feeling deeply in the quest for love. And the more you love, the more you risk of being hurt or emotionally damaged. But you just got to do it. I mean, take the risk. What's the point otherwise? As Alfred Tennyson memorably said, it's better to have loved and lost than never to have loved at all. I think that's true. But anyway, we are a storytelling species. I mean, our lives and our memories are stories. And the best movies and the best stories are about love and triumph and defeat. But ultimately, life is about loss. We lose our loved ones. We lose our friends. And ultimately, we lose ourselves as we fade out into the black. We all end up dead in the end. Spoiler alert. But, was your life a good story? A passionate one with some great moments and interesting twists. And until that eventual inevitable final fade out, we never know how the movie or our life will end. And that's what keeps me going sometimes, that unknown element. It's like, hey, there's always tomorrow. Something good might be around the corner. So keep it up, keep going, and eventually we'll run out of film. And speaking of life and storytelling, I read a great article on Lord Byron, the British poet. Quickly, a couple of just great quotes from Lord Byron. Be thou the rainbow in the storms of life, the evening beam that smiles the clouds away and tints tomorrow with prophetic ray. You never got me down, Ray. And just a fantastic quote. The great object of life is sensation, to feel that we exist, even though in pain. And sorry, one more. Love will find a way through paths where wolves fear to prey. And the article has a great section on the brilliance and unpredictability of Lord Byron's writings. It reads, the overall effect is like someone pitching knuckleballs. He seems to be just tossing lines at you, almost carelessly or without effort, but they're always moving unpredictably. And when you try to do it yourself, you realize how hard it is to throw without spin. 2 centuries later, this still seems a talent we're celebrating. I mean, how good is that? And finally, at long last, as the lawyer Joseph Welch famously said during the Senate's Joseph McCarthy's hearings, have you no sense of decency, sir? At long last, have you left no sense of decency? Such a epic mic drop moment, perhaps one of the best ever to that sleazeball Joseph McCarthy. But anyway, at long last. Let's end with Storytelling, which was a Todd Solondz comedy directed from 2001 with Selma Blair and Paul Giamatti and Leo Fitzpatrick, who was the lead in the Larry Clark, who's a scumbag, movie Kids from 1995 with the aforementioned Chloe Savini. And it was written by Harmony Korine. It's an okay movie, nothing great. But yeah, I'm not the biggest Todd Solondz fan, but again, I love his spirit and he seems genuinely and authentically fucking weird, which I always love. Be genuine. Be yourself. If it's weird, go for it. But anyway, there's a great song by the legendary Scottish band Belle and Sebastian. It's appropriately called Storytelling, and it was in the movie Storytelling. Anyway, here's a little bit of that. And until next week, let's all continue to work on our own stories, okay? And try to write the perfect scene. Picture a scene in your mind. Look at all the people and take note of the setting behind. Listen, watch, and wait. A plot begins to take shape. There's a story and then characters will come to you, relating events as they choose to. But all their words and actions come entirely from you. If you're a storyteller, you might think you're without responsibility, and you can lead your characters anywhere you want. You have immunity.